Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of December 4th, 2018. And this is episode number 378. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And for a second, I don't know, I thought it was like the middle of December. I was lost, honestly. I don't know. There's just a lot going on. I don't know about everybody else. You got Christmas coming up. The year's almost over. I don't know. For me, I just got a lot of stuff going on. But I don't know. We'll sort it out. There's nothing you can do. Time will continue to tick whether you want it to or not. Put that on a t-shirt and put my name at the bottom of that one. So this week, we've got a lot of jam-packed news for you, including the continuation of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018. Yes, it continues tonight. And we got a little bit of news on that as to when everything is going to be announced. We'll talk about that later in the show. That's, you know, got to tease you here a little bit on some of these stories. But tonight, some new news coming at you live. The top cryptozoology books of 2018 have been released, and we're going to talk about another pilot has reported a UFO. And we'll also talk about a big breaking story. A 22-foot-tall alien has just invaded Roswell. And the Aflocalypse, do you remember that story from a long time ago? The Aflocalypse has returned. And yes, again, the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018 continues. And if you missed last week's show, you missed number 10 and number 9 on that list. And you're going to have to wait 3 more weeks to hear the rest. I'm just kidding. Number 10, number 9, unless you go back to last week's show. But I'm just kidding. We're going to do a very quick recap on those two. So if you did miss Lex last week's show, shame on you, but that's okay. I get it. I don't even know what day of the week it is. Well, I'm on the radio, so it must be Tuesday. So, yes. And as always, my little spiel I do at each and every time I start one of these shows, I'm still putting together the list for the conferences and conventions for 2019 on my website, ParanewsInsider.com, and it's grown to be a pretty popular list. I've got a lot of people from all over the country, a variety of people from speakers, presenters, to people that are putting on these conventions that appreciate what I've done. It gets a lot of traffic, which is the goal here. I want to help these people out and get their events put out there. It's very, very difficult to do these things time-wise, money-wise, and put one on myself this year, so I know what it's all about. So I like to give back to the community at large here in North America and try to promote these events the best that I can with little time and I don't know what else you'd say, revenue, income, moneta, I don't know what you'd say, coming in to support that. So I do what I can to help support the fields out there, being ghosts, UFOs, as well as cryptozoology. So if you know of any conference or convention going on next year, let me know. Insider at ParanewsInsider.com, or you can contact me through the website at ParanewsInsider.com. Hey, get a hold of me through social media, Facebook, and Twitter. Facebook is facebook.com/ParanewsInsider, and Twitter is at ParanewsInsider. And welcome everybody that's out there in the chat room listening live. Really appreciate you guys and gals tuning in from all over the United States, Canada, and wherever else. I don't know. It's really, really, really cool to see the people in there having discussions and talking about different things and keeping me distracted from my stuff. No, it's good. It's all good. And questions and things about what I'm talking about. Because if you have a question about a story and you're in the chat room, probably somebody listening along may have that same thought. So I do appreciate those when those things do pop up. And I can help clarify anything that I'm talking about or answer other questions. Because sometimes I take it for granted that I've been doing this for as long as I have. Doing this radio show for over 10 years, plus being involved in the paranormal for over 20 years. So sometimes I don't quite have that perspective of what people know or don't know about what's going on out there. But that being said, yes, let's jump into some news tonight. Warm up the room as I get rid of these. I'm going to throw them on the fire to kind of warm it up in here a little bit. A nice balmy 29 degrees here, not in the studio, outside the studio. In here, it's 70 degrees, so it's temperate in the studio. Don't want it too warm. Don't want it too cold either. Then you start getting the sniffles. You don't want the sniffles. Anyway, cryptid news tonight. It's our leadoff story, and it's that time of the year. It's December, and as we get closer to the end of the year, it seems like everybody's got a countdown, or they got to top this and top that. I mean, gosh, there's so many of those. Can't believe people do those things. Oh, wait, I do it here, too. So we have a top list of cryptozoology books for 2018, and big fan of this, Lauren Coleman. Never heard of him? Lauren Coleman? How could you have never heard of Lauren Coleman? Lauren Coleman is one of the premier cryptozoologists here in the United States, pretty much what a lot of people refer to as a living legend. And very good guy, very intelligent guy. He's written a lot of books and participated in a lot of other books as well. He does an annual list of the top cryptozoology books of the year. And yes, I actually made that list a few years ago. It was a huge honor for me to land on that list back in 2014 with the number 6 book in what he dubbed was the best guidebook for the cryptozoologist in training for 2014 with my effort, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. And it was after it made that list that he and I talked. And he ended up wanting to write a foreword for my book, and I relaunched it as a second edition in 2015 with his name on the front cover as well, in addition to mine. So that was a huge honor, not only to make the list, but get his attention, and him wanting to be involved in that project. He said it was a book that he'd always wanted to write. And for me, there was no other, well, I shouldn't say no other first book I really wanted to write, but it was definitely a book in cryptozoology that I wanted to write, especially being that I've already done it for the ghost field, and I did want to do it for the UFO field. But a great honor to be on that list. But this year's list, I'm not on it. I didn't put anything out in the cryptid field or anywhere. I didn't get any of my books finished. That's a 2019 thing. That's one of my goals, is to get another book published. You heard it here first. So in the list this year, the best Loch Ness book of 2018 went to When Monsters Come Ashore, Stories of the Loch Ness Monster on Land by Roland Watson. Now, that sounds like an interesting book, and I've talked about that before here on the show about some of the, well, not really legitimate sightings, but back in the early days of the Loch Ness Monster, early days meaning the 1930s and 40s, there was a lot of hoaxes, including a hippopotamus foot, not a real hippopotamus, but a stuffed hippopotamus foot. I don't know if that's in the book, but that's what I think of when I think about the Loch Ness Monster coming ashore. And again, that book is written by Roland Watson. The best sea serpent book of 2018 went to The Seal Serpent, written by Rob Corns and Gary Cunningham. And the best Bigfoot book of 2018 went to Far Out, Shaggy Funky Monsters A What It Is: History of Bigfoot in the 1970s by Daniel S. Green. All I can say about that is groovy and far out, man. That's sounds like a really hip book right there. Actually, it does sound pretty good. 1970s, that was the heyday of Bigfoot sightings, when it really gripped all over the place here in the United States, from Pennsylvania down to Oklahoma, Missouri, all over the place. There were Bigfoot stories abound everywhere. That was the big time. I was a little kid back then, so I really don't remember much other than Solid Gold TV. That's about it. Solid Gold Dancers. That's all I can remember from the 1970s. Was that the 80s? I don't remember. It was all one big blur for me being a kid. Well, the best Bigfoot film book of 2018, yes, film book of 2018, went to the weirdest movie ever made, the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film by Phil Hall. I'm not sure if that was a weird movie, but it was an attempted movie. The top two regional Bigfoot books of 2018 went to Buckeye Beasts, Historical Accounts of Gorillas, Wild Men, and Other Hairy Monsters in Ohio by Tyler Houck, and Bigfoot West Coast Wild Men, A History of Wild Men, Gorillas, and Other Hairy Monsters in California, Oregon, and Washington State by Timothy Renner. And Timothy Renner, he's a great guy, very knowledgeable, and it was a treat to hang out with him earlier this year at the Albatwitch Festival, or Albatwitch Day, I guess they called it, back in October. Really good guy. I got to listen to him speak. Really nice guy. The best youth cryptozoologist training book of 2018 went to Ramblings of Teenage Cryptozoologists by Colin Schneider and Tyler Houck. And big congratulations to Colin, who I do consider a good friend. Met him a long time ago. Well, not a long time ago, a few years ago. I spoke at his high school a few years ago and had him at my convention earlier this year. Very brilliant mind, very ahead of his time. I'm very, very happy he finally got something out there. And I'm sure you're going to be hearing a lot more from him soon. Yeah, we used to be on the same radio station there for a while as well. Got him a gig, I guess, on the radio network that I used to be on. So it was fun being a neighbor on the radio, if that's such a thing. The best mystery cat book of 2018 went to Shadow Cats, The Black Panthers of North America by Michael Mays. Now, this book is on my Christmas list. I hope I get my paws on it. I can't wait. I've been wanting to read this book ever since I saw it come out. It was on my list of to-buy books, and it's now number one, because I got my other book that I had wanted, which, I left it in my car. But anyway, well, I'll be talking about that book. It's about ghosts. It's about ghosts, and I have news about that in a couple of weeks, hopefully. I should have it done, hopefully, soon. Let's see. Lost my place. Another good friend of mine took home the best Lake Monsters book of 2018, called On Aquatic Monsters of the Great Lakes, An Investigation into Legends and Sightings of Unknown Animals, by none other than the great Ronald L. Murphy Jr. Now, I've not read this book yet, but I can honestly tell you, I can't wait to get my hands on this one as well. And the whole series that Ron Murphy has written, the whole, I guess I'd call it the On series, is fantastic. And I've talked about a few of them here on the show. I used to do the Book of the Week way back when, and I think I had like four or five of these books on the on my favorites list here. But on ghosts, on wild man, on dog man, on vampires, on mermaids, on Donner, and on Blitzen. Oh, wait, no. He didn't write those last two. But yes, on mermaids, on vampires, on dogman, on wildman, and on ghosts. That's all I can remember. I'm sure there's probably 10 other ones, but that's all I can remember off the top of my head. Plus, he's got a couple of other regional books, very good books from Western Pennsylvania. If you're familiar with Chestnut Ridge, you want to get your hands on his Chestnut Ridge book. I almost said get your hands on his Chestnut Ridge. That probably wouldn't go over too well with the FCC. He's also a really fantastic researcher and a fantastic writer. And I tell you, he blew me away when I first met him. Can't remember the convention. Pennsylvania. I don't remember. But he was just brilliant. The way he put his presentation together, the information he was providing, just the way he spoke, it was just mind-boggling. And I became a fan that day of Ronald L. Murphy Jr., and you should be too. He's a brilliant writer. I got to stop name dropping here, I think. The top juvenile fiction book, The Cryptid Catcher by Elijah Fisher. And finally, the number one cryptozoology book of the year went to Mystery Creatures of China, The Complete Cryptozoological Guide by David C. Shu. And also, speaking of Lauren Coleman, the International Cryptozoology Museum will be hosting the ICC 2019 at the Clarion Hotel and the International Cryptozoology Museum at Thompson's Point in beautiful coastal Portland, Maine on April 26th, 27th, and 28th of 2019. And the ICC 2019, the International Cryptozoology Conference 2019. Check it out. If you want to find more information, go to CryptoZooNews.com and see who's speaking and maybe figure out where you're going to stay. So make a weekend. We're going to have to make a weekend. It's 3 days. Make a week out of it and definitely visit the museum. And if you do, get a picture of yourself and my book in there. I want to see my book, where it's at in that museum. If I don't make it up there, I probably won't make it up there by April, but hopefully next year I get my keister up there and check out that book. So let me throw that link in the chat room of the top crypto books of 2018. And again, I hope I don't land on anybody, but throw that in there. And again, yeah, if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out on all the links to these stories. Yeah, I know. You could probably find them yourself. That's fine. Be that way. But it's nice. And if you do miss them, you're not live chat. Trust me, I get it. You got things to do. Maybe you're listening live, but you're making dinner or you're playing video games or you're, I don't know. I don't know. Whatever you're doing. But anyway. After tonight's show will get posted later on tonight, and then tomorrow I'll start putting out these links day by day. I don't like to inundate all my social media with 500 posts or automatic 20 posts a day or anything like that, but I'll get those out to you throughout the week between now and next week. So a question about the top cryptozoology books of 2018. It's essentially Lauren Coleman's list. So it's very similar to the way I do my list. I do my list for myself. And I'm sure Lauren Coleman ranks these books by how he feels about it. He does read them. So you can submit your book if you have a cryptid book coming out next year and you want him to get it on that list. I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. But yeah, he does it all himself. And believe me, I totally trust him when he's going to rank cryptozoology books, because he's pretty much been right in the middle of this for quite a while. So, yep. So that's your cryptid news for the week. I know not as much as I thought would be in there, but now we're going to move to UFO news, which has really been picking up steam lately. And I'm only covering a portion because there's a lot of stories that are coming out that are really just super, super fishy. And they're just really being pushed out by not so legitimate people. So I'm trying to sidestep as many of those questionable stories as I can to keep that, you know, keep me on the from falling over the edge, I guess, a little bit of talking about stories that really have no reason to be talked about on live radio or even mentioned on a paranormal blog. Just saying. But anyway. And UFO news on November 24th, the crew aboard a Boeing 737 reported seeing an unidentified flying object while flying over Baffin Island in Canada. The sighting took place at 8:30 p.m. local time and was described as a shining light that changed colors from red to green and then white. It's too early to be Santa Claus. The official report was taken by Transport Canada's Civil Aviation Daily Occurrence Reporting System. What a mouthful. Or CADORS. And I do have a picture of that report, which is really what makes it interesting, is the actual report itself. And it made the internet. And just seeing that report raised a lot of eyebrows. And so I'll post that in the chat room. Hopefully all goes well. And you guys get a sneak peek of that. There it is. It's kind of hard to read, but if you click on it, it will expand. So yes, the CADORS, Canada's Civil Aviation Daily Occurrence Reporting System. So in the report, if you look at it, it's noted that the class of investigation was a potential weather balloon, meteor, rocket, or a service/UFO. So service or CIRVIS. I don't know, maybe it's CURVIS. I don't know. This actually stands for and refers to the Communications Instructions for Reporting Vital Intelligent Sightings. Sounds all technical-like and sounds really spooky and scary. The Communications Instructions for Reporting Vital Intelligence Sightings is an Air Force regulation, or AFR 55-88, that was created on May 20th, 1968, as part of the Air Force Manual 55-11, Air Force Operational Reporting System. Yes, it sounds all technical, but service has little to do with UFOs. However, as it's mainly directed at reports of, quote, all unidentifiable, suspicious, or hostile air or seaborne traffic, which, because of its nature, course, or actions, must be considered a threat to the security of the United States or Canada, unquote. So, yes, it does use the word unidentifiable, but that doesn't mean a strange alien red, white, and blue craft or red, white, and green craft flying through the sky. It's just any kind of thing. And this sighting was also reported immediately to the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or as you know it lovingly, as NORAD, who does track Santa Claus every year, his whereabouts, make sure he's not going too fast so we don't shoot him down as an incoming ballistic missile. And obviously the thought that this might have been some sort of rocket launch toward North America did have to be taken into consideration as such. That's what they're there for. And just in case, you never know. It's the shortest distance. If Russia's going to, or anywhere in that area is going to come after us, it's not going to come across the globe. It's going to come right over the top and try to get us through the top hat there. But luckily we have all that big chunk of ice of Canada to slow it down and freeze it, I guess. I don't know if that works that way. Sounds cool. So the sighting was on the northern part of Baffin Island, which is north of Hudson Bay. This is all geography. So this is your geography lesson. It's the largest island in Canada, Baffin Island, and the fifth largest island in the world. Well, we have states here in the United States. Canada has 10 provinces and 3 territories. They're really bad at making decisions, I guess. And Baffin Island exists within the territory of Nunavut. Nunavut, or it's spelled N-U-N-A-V-U-T. It's very, if you look it up, people argue about what it's, how it's pronounced, but Nunavut, that's how I pronounce it. So Nunavut, according to Wikipedia, is the newest, largest, and northernmost territory of Canada. It was separated officially from the Northwest Territories on April 1st, 1999. No fooling. Via the Nunavut Act. Personally, I think it's called Nunavut, since if you ask where people live in northern Canada, the response is None of it. Ouch, I got Canada jokes tonight. Actually, it means our land in local language, but I think the joke is accurate as the population is just shy of 36,000 people. It's not that many. I've been to baseball games with more than that. The territory has the largest area in Canada at 680,000 square miles, which is actually slightly smaller than the size of Mexico. It's a lot of chimichangas. 36,000 people would make it the ninth largest city, if it were a city, in the state of New Mexico. Roswell has a population of just over 48,000 people. So it'd be bigger. Roswell, bigger than the entire territory of Nunavut. And that is your geography lesson for today, brought to you by the Paranormal News Insider. Anyway, back to the story. Got a little sidetracked with the geography. While the object appeared as a light in the sky, many think that this was actually just a sighting of a star or maybe even a planet. You know, they twinkle. It's actually technically called scintillation. Possibly also a quickly breaking up meteor. Could have flashed a variety of colors, or they just saw the flash and they just interpreted it of different colors. More than likely green and white. The red could have just been the flash of it burning up immediately. So it could have been really anything. But to me, when I first heard this story and it said red, green, and white. Now, anybody that knows anything about aviation, that sounds like a potential aircraft to me. You know, the red is usually on the, well, it should be, has to be on the right wing if it's coming toward you. Be on the left wing if it's going away from you. And you'd have green on the opposite and white on the tail and potentially a headlight. So to me, it could have been another aircraft. Again, probably further away than what they thought, which is possible when you're in kind of remote regions like that and you really don't have any kind of a field of vision below you to kind of put things in perspective. Distances become a little bit disorienting at that altitude and with, again, not a whole lot of stuff underneath you to give you that perspective of what's going on around you. So this sighting now joins the Ireland report where three pilots reported seeing an object which was more than likely a meteor, as well as the Arizona sighting earlier this year by two aircraft that to this day remains unsolved. And throw that story in the chat room as well. And you guys can, I don't know, you do whatever you want with this one. As for me, I don't want none of it. Just kidding. Pretty interesting story. I mean, you have to wonder, you know, why are these pilots reporting these things? Because it's pretty much a career killer for people to, a pilot to be talking about seeing an unidentified flying object. They think you're crazy. And they'll, you know, you're not going to get too many jobs if your name's popping up on all these reports about seeing alien-powered spacecraft flying around the sky. But I have to tell you that it's becoming a little bit more, I don't know what the word would be, lenient of a discussion. You know, it's always been something that people laughed at. But every now and again, there is a story that people really do take seriously. And they wonder, is this it? You know, could they be getting ready to land on the White House lawn or whatever's going to happen? But, you know, you still get the snickering and the joking every now and again. You know, you see a sighting and they start playing the X-Files theme on the news. It's the same old tired joke. But you have to wonder, you know, why are these pilots now coming forward? I mean, although this one here is a little different because it's in an area where people are a little nervous when they see lights in the sky like that because of potential rocket launches and missiles and things coming our way, or Canada's way. But still, interesting stuff, I think. And that, I believe, is the only story I have. Nope, it is not. So one more UFO story. And speaking of Roswell, New Mexico, there was a reason why I made that connection with the size. Because there was a report on Tuesday, November 27th, of a giant alien that measured 22 feet tall being seen in town. I mean, how do you miss this thing? 22 feet tall. Well, I don't know. I'm sure somebody saw it. There's actually a picture of it, which I'll show you here in a second. There's actually a picture of a 22-foot tall alien. Russia does submit UFO sightings on the odd occasion to MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. I do know that there is a Russian Society of UFO Investigators. I don't remember what it's called. It's very hard to pronounce. It would sound like I'm clearing my throat. But they do investigate UFO reports. They do get a lot, but unfortunately, it's kind of weird because a lot of the people live in remote areas, so you may never even hear about these sightings. So it's strange that a majority of the UFO sightings in Russia are happening around some more of the major metropolitan areas, which is weird. But I guess you'd expect that because there's more people. But these remote areas, I'm sure, have some really interesting stories up there. So, yeah. Not sure what... yeah, okay. So anyway, we got this 22-foot alien creeping around Roswell, New Mexico. And let me throw the... let me throw this picture in here. I'm not kidding you. It's huge. Here he is. That picture in the chat room for you guys. And you'll see it here in a second. So anyway, 22 foot tall. Our pictures of this. The giant alien appeared on Tuesday morning on Main Street in downtown Roswell, New Mexico. And he's holding a sign above his head that says, Duncan. Dunkin', as in Dunkin' Donuts. That's right. It's new corporate signing for a new restaurant that's opening up in downtown Roswell, New Mexico. Got another good picture here of this dude. You can see the entire guy here, the entire alien in one shot. He's actually two aliens, technically, because he's back-to-back with himself. I don't know. Maybe this is how they breed him. Thanks to KOB4 there in New Mexico. Dunkin' Donuts. And Baskin-Robbins store, so I guess that's kind of a volatile mix of food right there, I think. I think we want to think about that. It's a store that's set to open on Main Street in downtown Roswell, New Mexico, very soon. And the signing for this, obviously, is a one-of-a-kind and something that they've never done before for Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know where else you'd put a giant 22-foot alien. So it's a first for Dunkin' Donuts or Dunkin' Donuts Baskin-Robbins stores. The sign took over a year of planning and 8 weeks to complete at a cost just north of $35,000. That's a lot of green in more ways than one. Is it worth it? Well, if you want to stand out next door, the next door neighbor to this restaurant is a McDonald's restaurant that has part of the building shaped like a UFO. So I think having a giant 22-foot alien out in front holding up your sign, that's a pretty darn good start to face the home of the Big Mac. It's got a shape like a giant UFO. Boy, would it be fun to eat fast food out there. I don't know. One day I'll get out there. One day I'll get out there. So I'll throw that picture in the chat room there. So there it is. Pretty cool looking McDonald's. That's just part of the building, though. That's just one little area. I think that's where the play place is. So you have to put up with a bunch of kids drooling all over those little plastic balls. I hope that's drool in the ball pit. I hate to think what that could be. Oh, no. Johnny, go see your dad. Giant 22-foot alien. It's a new sign, $35,000. Now, the store will open later this month, and the franchises say they will actually have a contest to name the alien. My vote, my early vote, is for Greeny McGreenface. That's what I want him to be called. Well, the residents love it. You'd think that some people would be outraged that that money would go to that, but they love it. And really and truly, why wouldn't they? They should embrace this UFO culture surrounding it because it adds to their local economy. I mean, yeah, I mean, yes, there's already a McDonald's on Mars. There was a Walmart there about 10 years ago, so kind of late to the punch. There's probably a McDonald's inside of that Walmart. So, no, just kidding. That's not true. I'm not reporting that as actual news. It's fake news. So let me put that link into the chat room. Thank you, KRQE.com news. I guess that's big news in Roswell. It's right down the street from the museum there, which if you ever get down there, it's not that big of a place. Roswell's not that big. But you have to go see all these sites. You have to go see all this stuff. Definitely worth the drive or the flight, or I don't know how you get there. Hitchhike, whatever you got to do to get there, you got to get there. So anyway, one last story. The Aflocalypse has returned. And what is the Aflocalypse? Well, the Aflocalypse is basically an apocalypse of animals dying. That's why they call it a flock, a lips, not of lips, not those kind of things. No, it's animals dying. So mass animal die-offs. Back in 2011, that was a pretty big story. The flockalypse or mass animal die-offs did make the top 10 paranormal news stories, and it's even listed under Wikipedia under 2010-2011 midwinter animal mass death events. So, yeah. It's got to be real. It's on Wikipedia. Yeah. So, Domino's Pizza. So, Domino's is going to go to deliver to Mars. Well, it only takes 49 days to get to Mars. Depends on how many hands you have on the wheel, but I don't know if I'd want my pizza going 580,000 feet per second. Awful fast. But anyway, the Aflocalypse is back, and a new mystery has appeared this year in Hillsboro, Oregon, where over two dozen birds were discovered dead in a field. Now, these stories do pop up every now and again, and when they do come out, there's already kind of a feeling of a solution. This one is a little confusing. Not overly confusing, but it's still interesting, and I want to keep one eye on it. That's why I'm talking about it tonight. I don't think there's going to be too much more to this story outside of this story. I don't think we're going to see a lot more mass animal die-offs. We may see one or two more interesting stories of a large amount of birds, or maybe some aquatic animals. It's this time of the year. It happens from now all the way through pretty much spring here in the northern hemisphere. You're going to hear about it. Yep. You're going to hear more about it. So, again, mass animal die-offs, an actually very common occurrence. It's just that year, 2010, late 2010, early 2011, it just made the news. And it became a very viral story. People were panicking. They thought it was end times. They really did. They thought the Earth was coming to an end because of a bunch of ravens were dying. But that wasn't the case. We're still spinning out here in space. Yes, we only have a few years left till 2023. NASA says that a giant asteroid, it's not really that giant, it's like 770 feet wide, still do a lot of damage. I sure as heck don't want to be underneath that thing. If it does fall, then we got a chance. We got a chance. I'm going to be setting up a chair. I'm going to be watching that one. It's going to be fun times. So these birds, yes, it's common. It does happen. A lot of times it's caused by weather, natural events, or they just get confused or sick and they just end up crashing into a mountain or collapsing for whatever reason. This time, the red-winged blackbirds, European starlings, as well as a red-tailed hawk and a bald eagle. That's really sad. I mean, forget the red-winged blackbirds. Those are everywhere. Bald eagles? Come on. They were among the casualties, and the birds are still dying in the area. They're still being discovered. Bob Salinger, the conservation director at Audubon Society of Portland, believes that the red-winged blackbirds may have been poisoned, as it's not illegal to do so, but the issue is with the hawk and the bald eagle, which are protected species. It is illegal to poison them, either intentionally or unintentionally, and the hawk and bald eagle more than likely came in for a free meal of the other dead birds and then were inadvertently poisoned themselves. Another thought was that a transformer might have electrocuted the birds. No, not Optimus Prime or Bumblebee. Silly. An electrical transformer might have electrocuted them. But officials inspected the transformer, and it was outfitted to be avian safe. That's good for birds to you and me. And the birds discovered did not show any signs of trauma whatsoever. In the meantime, birds are being transported to a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Lab in Ashland, Oregon, to be analyzed for what might have happened to them. I'm going to say poisoned. This wouldn't be the first time that we've actually had an anaphylaxis story that stemmed from poisoned birds. So keep an eye on that one. Well, I'm sure it'll take a couple of weeks for the necropsies to come back on the birds. And we'll see. We shall see. It's always weird, though, when a story like this does go and it comes back as inconclusive. What does that mean? What happened? It's weird. So with that, we're going to jump back in to the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018. I don't know why I said it that way. It just kind of came out that way. So the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018 continues tonight with number 8 and number 7 on the list. And kind of a lineup rearrangement for this. So what I was going to do originally, I was going to do, I did two last week, do two this week, and then I was going to do two on December 11th, and then two on the 18th. Of December, and then she's going to take Christmas off. She's going to take Christmas off, but I was going to do New Year's Day, but decided that that might not be the smartest thing for me to do. So I'm going to take, I hope you don't mind, I'm going to take 2 weeks off in a row, Christmas and New Year's, so that'll give you guys a little bit of time. But we'll be back in full force on the 8th, and if you guys want, I can hold on to the top two until January 8th. No, of course I wouldn't do that. No, we're going to do, we're going to spill it all. We're going to throw it all out there on the 18th, and we'll all have to hope together that nothing major happens from December 19th through the 31st. That's gambling. I've never finished the top 10 that early in the year, but I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go for it. It's all in. We're going to gamble it. We're going to say that it's nothing's major is going to happen. But if something does happen, when I come back, I'll do a little short rehash of the top 10. And if anything changes, obviously, I wouldn't be on the air for those 2 weeks that I was off. So when we come back, if there is a change in the lineup, we'll reflect it on there. But I think it's pretty much a lock for these stories. It would take pretty much something very, very major to happen. And who knows? It could happen in the next 2 weeks. And that's always interesting. We've only had one time, I think, that something really changed things. But if you weren't here last week, number 10 of the top 10 was Todd Standing. It's not really an outstanding story, but... Todd Stanley has been in the news. A Bigfoot researcher has been suing different places. He jumped in a California lawsuit about the acknowledging Bigfoot, as well as in British Columbia, Canada, hassling them up there. But that was kicked out of court. And now it remains to be seen as to what's going to be happening with Standing. But it was in the news all year long. Not the best story to represent cryptozoology, but nonetheless, it was a big story between the media, pretty much. The people in the paranormal here, we were just shaking our heads, hoping it would just go away. Not a really good story for us, but nonetheless, for me, I felt like it cracked the top 10. A lot of stories didn't make it. I mean, I've got a list of like 30 or 40 stories here. Some of these actually went together. I do what I call bundling. Bundle some stories together. And sometimes when you add things together, they kind of jump up the list a little bit higher. But sometimes it's not even the case. There's a lot of viral stories that didn't make it this year, including Bigfoot erotica. I was really pulling for Bigfoot erotica to make it in there, but it didn't. Nope. Ogopogo is one I was really hoping for. At one point in time, it was in the top 10, but I got booted out. It didn't make the final cut. It was in there for a little while in my personal voting, but it didn't make it. Even those Thailand clarinet-wielding trolls, they didn't make it. Remember that North Carolina UFO video that turned out to be the Goodyear blimp? Yeah, that didn't make it either. That creepy guy that the guy that was a Bigfooter, he was a child pornographer, moonlighting as a Bigfooter, wearing this uniform, like an official Bigfoot researcher button so he could meet kids. Gross. That was the reason why that didn't make the top 10. But what did? What other stories other than Todd Stanning? Well, the number 9 story that I revealed last week was about the strange creature that wandered into the live shot in Utah. So the television host, she saw this strange creature walk up to her and walk by her. And there was a lot of speculation. Was this a mountain lion? Was it a dog? It was a dog and did crack the top 10, even though it lasted probably about 6 hours until it was solved. It was still a very highly viral, highly debated story, and people are still talking about that. People are still divided over that. So that's number 9. So what is number 8 this year? Well, let me go through. I have 40 pages worth of material here for the top 10. 40 pages. Well, most of it's stories that didn't make it. But number 8 this year on the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018. This is another viral story, not really a viral video, pretty much a viral photograph and story. And this story erupted back on May 24th when the report of a wolf was shot by a rancher in Denton, Montana, and he'd shot it back on May 16th. Now, that wasn't the big part of the story. When officials showed up to verify the creature was a wolf, they were not convinced. They didn't think it was a wolf at all. They thought it was something totally different. The rancher was required by law to report the animal, and Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks officials showed up to view the animal. The photographs of the creature lying in the back of a pickup truck went viral, as many people did not think this was a regular wolf. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks officials stirred the pot even more with a statement that said, quote, "Something was not right about the animal. It does not look like a wild wolf," unquote. The paws were too small, the front claws seemed too long, the teeth were too short, and even the ears looked noticeably different than a regular wolf, which immediately sparked speculation that this is a wolf-dog hybrid. Now, that's the light side of this story. That's the simple part of it where people were speculating. Meanwhile, in the paranormal world, many were speculating that this was a werewolf. maybe even a dog man. Why not a chupacabra? Or even maybe an alien? Even Newsweek. Yes, Newsweek stated that this, some people thought that this picture represented a Bigfoot. A Bigfoot. Maybe in disguise, maybe. I don't know. A Bigfoot wearing a werewolf costume? I don't know. It didn't look like a Bigfoot to me just because it had hair and fur type things. But yeah, I don't know. I was a little confused by that one. But the alien aspect too was reported by a major news outlet. Officials were actually really fantastic with this story and really helped, I think, settle the story down. It would have been probably much higher in the countdown because of the speculation that was running rampant with this story. Really could have lost control. Really could have skidded all the way up into the, maybe even the top piece here. I don't know. Well, this is a pretty big story in the paranormal. People were really arguing about this, and people were very convinced it was something like a werewolf. The officials about this story issued a video statement of what was occurring and discussed that they were just as curious about the background of this creature as anyone else. And they also said that samples were sent out to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service National Forensics Laboratory in Ashland, Oregon, to be tested. Ken Goddard, the laboratory director, was even candid about the investigation process as the lab was still processing the DNA. The popular opinion at the time was that this was a wolf-dog hybrid. And with the lab's capabilities, he said in an interview, quote, "We may not be able to tell the exact hybrid mix, but we should be able to describe that it's not, for example, an extinct wolf or a werewolf or any of the other interesting possibilities," unquote. The results were released on July 19th, and the verdict was in. The animal was just a regular gray wolf. The lab concluded that it was a female gray wolf that had was about 2 to 3 years old, that was 45 inches long and weighed 85 pounds. So why was this story in the top 10? Well, the speculation ran wild about what this creature might have been, despite the fairly obvious situation that the worst-case scenario would be a wolf hybrid, a wolf-dog hybrid, and many went into the extreme of thinking this was some sort of paranormal creature, but the story was just not a paranormal story, but it did gain viral status in many different social media circles, and there's a lot of media circles as well. It was ran pretty heavy for the few weeks that it was out, and even when it was kind of in a holding pattern, people were still publishing stories about it, and pretty much every paranormal outlet from coast to coast to anybody and everybody in between was talking about this story when it broke, and all the way through really July, people kind of sidestepped the solution as they always do, but May and June were pretty big with this story. And why this story was number 8? Well, the story felt a lot like the previous story of the unidentified creature seen on live television. The difference here was not just the speculation of the identity of the creature, but the mysterious nature behind it, as well as the near 2 months wait to find out what this thing was. So with the previous story, it was solved pretty quickly, within a few hours. The story also had more of a paranormal or cryptozoological feel to it, even though it shouldn't have, more than the Utah story. So that brings us to number 7 this year on the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018. So yes, the number 8 story, I would title that Wolf-like Creature Shot in Montana. So number 7 this year was, well, it's actually part of a story that I reported tonight, and kind of really solidifying it for me. I wasn't sure how far up or down this story was going to be. I knew it was going to make the top 10, and I nervously bumped it up last week, and it was a good guess because another story broke during that time since then. So I got lucky on this one. So number 7 this year on the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018 is UFOs reported by pilots. And yes, of course, I mentioned it earlier in the show that it happened in 3 different cases, 3 different places in the world. Arizona, Canada, and Ireland. So the first of these 3 stories, and this I'll call it again, a bundled entry, broke on March 26th when reports of 2 different pilots reported seeing an unidentified flying object in the skies over southern Arizona on February 24th. A pilot of a Learjet reported seeing something strange to Albuquerque Center Air Traffic Control and said of the sighting, quote, "I don't know what it was. It wasn't an airplane, but it was, the path was going in the opposite direction," unquote. Air Traffic Control then contacted an American Airlines jet headed to Dallas from San Francisco and told them to be on the lookout for anything passing over them. The pilot questioned the request, but just moments later they reported seeing the object, and the pilot described this object to Air Traffic Control saying, quote, "Something just passed over us, like a, don't know what it was, but it was at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us," unquote. The pilot stated the object was above 40,000 feet and had a big radar signature. And this altitude is much too high, even for commercial drones, which leaves only weather or other types of balloons. Military exercises or other involvement was pretty much eliminated, and the mystery of what was in the air was never really truly solved. And many people jumped to the irrational conclusions, even the news media that speculated about this UFO since the sighting occurred around 500 miles west of Roswell, New Mexico. Roswell, obviously, of course, was home to the famous purported 1947 UFO crash and supposed cover-up, and is now home to a giant 22-foot Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins sign. He's holding it up. So that's your first of 3 stories. Then we had in November, I guess you could say this one was maybe slightly bigger than the Arizona one, social media-wise. So Friday, November 9th, 6:47 a.m., a British Airways pilot operating flight BA-94 from Montreal contacted Shannon Air Traffic Control off the southwest coast of Ireland and asked if there were any military activities scheduled to be in the area. Air Traffic Control said no, the air is clear, and the pilot then denied their observation. The pilot stated about what she had seen, quote, "It was moving so fast. It appeared on our left-hand side and rapidly veered to the north. We saw a bright light and then it disappeared at a very high speed," unquote. A Virgin Airlines pilot, flight VS-76 from Orlando to Manchester, also contacted Air Traffic Control and reported, quote, "A meteor or another object making some kind of re-entry. It appears to be multiple objects following the same sort of trajectory. They were very bright from where we were," unquote. So both pilots also reported seeing 2 bright lights in the sky, and the Virgin Airlines pilot also stated that the object flew past his aircraft and then climbed away from him from his perspective. Other pilots chimed in during this conversation, including one from a Norwegian air flight, and seemed convinced that this was just some sort of meteor. But they all seemed surprised by the incident, and the object was described as going about twice the speed of sound, or what they described as astronomical speed. According to CBS News, the Irish Aviation Authority said these reports will be, quote, "investigated under the normal confidential occurrence investigation process." One would have to speculate that with how many hundreds of hours these pilots put in, you'd wonder, you'd think they would be pretty familiar with meteors and shooting stars. But then again, they can catch you off guard sometimes. There's no way to really predict when they're going to happen. And liveatc.net released a 31-minute MP3 recording of the incident, which has also gotten a lot of airtime. But the action, if you do get a hold of that 31 minutes, you can fast forward into 17 minutes. And it only lasts a couple minutes. Now, a week later after that report, I reported that dash cam footage of the purported UFO over Ireland had surfaced online. The footage was shot by Sandy Laverty and shows a bright object moving in the sky and then suddenly breaking into pieces. And this was obviously a meteor streaking through the sky and breaking up. This story became viral quickly after it was reported that three pilots had simultaneously reported that they saw the UFOs in the sky over southwestern Ireland. You know, a lot of people thought immediately it was probably a meteor, but there was a lot of inquiry, especially revolving around this inconsistency in the reporting by these pilots. I know that's what kind of held me up in you know, the interim, but we had to realize that this time was affected by three different meteor shower events going on at the same time, overlapping each other. The Orionids, which were active from September 23rd to November 27th, the Northern Taurids, which were active October 19th, still active until December 10th, and the Leonids, active from November 5th through November 30th. Also, while there were no immediate reports put into the various databases of meteor sightings, there were five reports collected by the International Meteor Organization, and a trajectory was created from these sightings. And while there's still a little bit of confusion by the statements of one of the pilots, I believe the flash was created. It did create a little bit of misdirection. And since most of the other witnesses matched the trajectory, the one that doesn't fit probably doesn't fit. It's probably one that was just misinterpreted. I don't know if that's a word. But anyway, again, tonight I talked about another story that happened on November 24th. A crew aboard a Boeing 737 reported seeing an unidentified flying object while flying over Baffin Island in Canada. And it was described as a bright light, shining light that went from red to green to white. It was a pretty interesting story. Really didn't see too much of that. It was a kind of low-keyed story, but I think it might pop up any day now. It might get a little bit of airplay, but again, I mentioned that earlier in the show, but I think it added to this, and I thought it was appropriate to take this and lump it in with these other two reports, which, again, you don't hear too much of this, and we haven't heard much of this since the Chicago O'Hare Airport incident, but even then, the reports from pilots were nil. And so why this story was on the top 10? Well, the Arizona and Ireland stories were pretty highly viral within and outside the UFO and paranormal communities. And even though the solution was more than likely a meteor for the Ireland sighting, there was still the belief held by many, including the mainstream media, that this was a potential UFO of the definition of a alien-controlled craft. The Arizona and Canada sightings remain unsolved, but are more than likely a logical solution. So why was the story only number 7? Well, despite my opinion of being the most popular UFO story or collection of stories for 2018, it didn't really have the viral strength or story power to go much higher in my countdown. Despite being lumped, you know, three stories lumped into one, just didn't have that oomph to get over the top. And again, next week, we will be back. We'll already be halfway done as of next week, as we'll have number 6 and number 5. Maybe I'll do number 4, too. Yeah, that would make sense. So 6, 5, and 4 will debut next week of the top 10 paranormal news stories. You never know what could be in there. It's going to be some interesting stuff. Could be controversial. It's definitely going to bring back some memories of 2018. But until then, again, thank you to everybody in the chat room, everybody for listening to the show live or otherwise. And yeah, I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.